And as of late, I know for a fact social media has had a pretty heavy buzz lately, with a strong emphasis, especially on the wake of all the events that have recently occurred, and particularly with Charlie Kirk and this call to maybe get back into church, find your place in the church, and seek to find those answers, discover truth. What is truth? Well, I want to just let you all know that as a church, that is what we always seek to pursue. We want to know the truth, but not just a truth as to how somebody defines it. We want to know the truth in accordance with what God has revealed to us directly. And we know that what God speaks is the truth. And so that's what you're going to hear when you come here each week. This is what is taught. This is what is proclaimed. This is what we address with one another. But I got to add something to this, because we don't want to merely be a church that is only about truth. It is equally important that we are a people that are about love as well. And when I say that, it's because we love because God first loved us. And scriptures tell us that if we love God, then we will go about and we will love one another as well. In a church that is going to be all about truth but forget love, that's going to be a hard and brittle place. And that is not what we want to be about. We see that both are equally important. And so, as a result, our goal is that you feel and experience the love of God when you come here, but you also hear the words of God as a result of doing so. And so that means at times we're going to be speaking on various issues. And sometimes those issues in our day and age have become politicized. Well, our emphasis, again, is going to be on truth and love surrounding the issues, not about the politics surrounding them. We'll have to cut through that at times, and we will. But I want to give you a reminder. As awful and as tragic as it was that a 31-year-old man recently lost his life being shot and his life being taken by a bullet, that's not why we meet. We meet because of a 33-year-old God man who went to a cross willingly in submission to his Father. And as a result of going to that cross, surrendered and gave up his life so that our sins and the penalty for our sins would be placed upon him, and he would incur that penalty on our behalf. He would then give us his righteousness, his perfection, that we might now have a restored relationship with the God of the universe who loves us and wants to be with us. And so as a result, that, ladies and gentlemen, is what we're about and what we will be about week after week after week. So we want to help you on this journey as we go along, and that's why after the service, we have the intro. We'll also have a next step station. We've got LifePoint. I'm going to be up here at the front and just inviting you all to come forth because we want to help you on this spiritual journey so that you can go and you can be and you can rest in that which God has set for you. So with all that, we're going to begin a look at a book in the Bible, and that book in particular is one called Job. If you have a Bible, I'll invite you to take them out. You can turn with me there and just go to the title page. I'm only going to address one particular passage in it this Sunday with you. But again, you know, when you come back to the most recent events, not long ago, I know we're all familiar with, it's been a few months ago now, when a healthcare executive is just walking to work and an assassin, someone who's disgruntled, comes out of nowhere and shoots him down in cold blood. And we see that, and it's troubling. Last month, there was a Catholic school in which parents sent their kids off to school in the morning. Everything was great. Everything was normal. And as the day ended, it was anything but normal, as children's lives were taken as a result of it. We've all seen the video of a woman who came from a country, a war-torn country of Ukraine. And she's just instantly riding on a bus, and an individual saw fit to take her life. And that one got publicized on the internet so that we could see, we could actually experience the horror in that. And then, of course, I've already addressed the things that went on with Charlie Kirk and his shooting as he was gunned down before our eyes. And there's a common denominator with all of these, and that is none of these people were guilty of some sort of heinous crime. None of them had done anything like that. These were not executions of justice. All of them were the same. They were an act of evil that happened against an innocent people. And it's at times like that where quite often we're really bothered. We begin to ask the hard questions, don't we? We start by saying, why? Why would this happen? Why did this happen to them? Why did it happen in this way? Maybe in some cases, why didn't someone step in? But at the heart of it, this is really what we're asking. Why does an all-knowing, all-powerful God, who could have stopped it, why would he not? Why didn't he do this? And this doesn't happen merely with violent crime. I mean, we'll encounter times where you'll have someone who has never smoked a cigarette in their life, and yet they're dying of lung cancer. And you go, why is that? Meanwhile, you've got another person who's been a chain smoker, 3 packs a day, who lives to be 85. And we look at that and go, how does this, I can't reconcile this. Or we knew a family in particular that was in Oklahoma, and tornadoes came through the place, and they hid in their house, and they survived it, and they walked out of their house when the storm went by. Their house was intact, but the one across the street was gone. And we encounter things like this, and we're struggling. And here's why. We long for moral logic in tragedy. That's what we're looking for. Where is the moral logic behind what it is that we just experienced? And yet sometimes we don't see it and we don't get it. We don't understand it. Pastor and teacher Christopher Ashe highlighted that there's 2 types of sufferers, people who go through this kind of thing. And he boiled them down these 2 categories. The first one he calls armchair sufferers. Now, an armchair sufferer is someone who can talk about pain, and maybe they have had experienced a little bit of it, but they do so with sort of a detached logic. They come to their pain, and it's like, if A is B and B is C, then A is C. So there you go. I have explained it all for you, and I've explained it for myself. And quite often, many times, it's a little bit like a review of a coffee blend, you know, very impersonal. Yeah, this suffering has some tones of bitterness and maybe a little hint of despair. I rate it a 7 out of 10. Armchair sufferers, they spout opinions. There's no tears in their eyes. But there's a second group of people, and we'll call these the wheelchair sufferers. And these are the people that carry scars, deep scars. And their reviews, they're not discussed from a coffee table or a coffee bar. They're discussed from a hospital bed. And they've got pain. They've experienced pain. Sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's emotional. They might walk with a limp, so to speak. And they don't theorize about suffering and what it involves. No, they're in it. They know what it is. They feel it. And they feel it deeply. So they don't just study the problem. As I said, they're undergoing the problem. And in this room, by the way, we have wheelchair sufferers. Some of you right now are that. Maybe it's some things like divorce or cancer, Alzheimer's, chronic pain, Lyme disease. Maybe you had to bury a child or somebody that you love very deeply. In other cases, maybe it's just you've experienced the rejection of family because of your faith. You follow Christ, and your family has a problem with that, and it brings a division and a deep, deep pain within. All of these situations, they put us in the wheelchair category. And among pastors, there is a saying, it goes like this, behind most doors lies pain. You might see it, you might not see it, but it's there. And that's why we need God to address it. We need God to speak on it and not act like it isn't real and it hasn't happened. We need help in looking at a universe of pain that has a sovereign God over it. And what do we do with all that? This, ladies and gentlemen, is why we have the book of Job in our Bibles. It gives a view of God that only pain will allow you to see. A short preview of it can be found in the 39th chapter. You can turn there if you want. This is one of those Sundays where I'm actually going to put the passage that we're looking at on the screen behind me here. It comes at you in a poetic form, and the speaker in this passage is going to be God himself. And so it begins in verse 13, and he's going to start with a creature. I mean, if you were going to think about a creature on the planet that you might use to explain this kind of thing, what would you pick? Something grand or majestic? God picks, of all creatures, an ostrich. Job 39, verse 13. The ostrich's wings flap joyously with the pinion and plumage of love. For she abandons her eggs to the earth and warms them in the dust, and she forgets that a foot may crush them or that a wild beast may trample them. She treats her young cruelly, as if they were not hers. And though her labor be in vain, she is unconcerned. And now this is the key verse behind this passage. Because God has made her forget wisdom and has not given her a share of understanding. This is a creature of God. And in particular, this creature has been designed by God to have a particular instinct. And yet there's a jeopardy that goes on with her children. There's a randomness about her behavior. And verse 17 summarizes the issue. There is a wisdom, quite frankly, that she lacks, an understanding that she just doesn't possess. And what's true of the ostrich in this text is true of Job, as we're going to see. And it's true of us as well. This is where we enter into the storyline as well. And as we go through this book, this is what we're going to be looking at together. But you heard it here first. Job 39:17 may be one of the best summaries of what Job is addressing in the entirety of the book. I'm going to give you a warning before we study it in the next coming months. You are not going to get a Sunday school answer to the problem of pain and your suffering. Not going to happen. It's not going to take your pain and just tidy it up in this nice little bow so that you can look at it and go, okay, it's all pretty. I understand it now. You're not going to get a couple of verses to take at night before bed to take away the pain so in the next morning you're going to be okay. There's a lot more behind it here. This book is real. And this book asks real questions, hard questions. Frankly, it's the questions you've asked when you've gone through deep pain, or you will. And if you're in a season in which you're an armchair sufferer, you're not going to like it. You're not going to like this study. And frankly, it's because on the one hand, it is just too raw. There's a rawness behind it that you're not going to like. It defies your logic and things about God, and it asks questions that make armchair sufferers extremely uncomfortable. And within its pages, you're at times going to find some wrong thinking that's expressed, some wrong teachings about God that'll be expressed. But one of the things that I've found so encouraging about reading this book is God doesn't necessarily shut those things down. He doesn't, because God is not afraid of your questions. He's not. He's big enough for it. A lot of people in the church are afraid of your questions when you get here. Makes us real uncomfortable, but not God. And in this book, though people believe it to be quite often about Job and primarily about suffering, I think it is ultimately about doing something else. This book is designed to strip away your simplistic view of who God is. He's a whole lot more complex than you ever thought him to be, a whole lot deeper. And that means you got to think when you go through this. You have to take the things that you knew about him and lay that before him and say, was this right, what I thought I knew about you? And come back to the scriptures to ask, to find the answers to those questions. Questions like, what does pain reveal to us about God? How do suffering and his sovereignty collide? And what do we do with this? What does worship look like when life collapses? Now, if you got a Bible, the paper kind, you're going to be at advantage in the exercise I'm about to give you. Just kind of look at it from the side. Find where the beginning of Job is and the end of Job. And then look at it in comparison to the book as a whole. For those of you that are doing a digital type, whether it's your pad or your phone, just go to the table of contents and just kind of look at the contents and what's expressed there. And one of the things you find, that's a pretty long book. It'll take you a while to get through it. It's 42 chapters long. When you go through the first three chapters of it, what you find is it's almost in some ways like a little Shakespearean tragedy or play. You've got a list of characters, a setup, dialogue, a story begins to open. And that's how the first three chapters go. It's just like a story. It's a narrative and begins to explain circumstances and things that were occurring. It then moves into the confrontation, which is what a classic story of tension will do. Here's where we are. Here's the tension. But then it ends by bringing about restoration and resolution. You might not be comfortable with the resolution. I'm just telling you now. But in between both of those, you're going to find page after page of very uncomfortable questions. You're going to find Job and his friends are arguing, and they're explaining, they're complaining, and they're failing. And the book's length is a reminder to all of us that your pain is not a drive-through experience. God won't give you a tweet for an answer to it. Here's what he's doing. He's inviting you in to a journey. Come with me. Come with me, and let's walk through this with Job. And it takes a while. Back in 2003, we had the opportunity to go on a mission trip to Zimbabwe. And as we were going there, we had to do a stopover in London. And it was about an eight-hour stopover. And we decided, well, we can just sit in the airport and be bored, or we can get on the tube and maybe get about 4 hours worth of sightseeing in London. So that's what we did. We jumped on the tube, we went out there, and we had to move fast because there was a lot of stuff we wanted to see. We started at one end at Buckingham Palace, and we walked, carrying suitcases, we walked all the way from there to the Tower of London, which if you're familiar with it, that is a long distance. And so we're walking past things, you know, and here I am, I'm going past, there's Westminster, there's Big Ben, great move, you know. Then we go on to another place, and before long we get to the Tower of London, we look, yep, there it is. If you want to go in, we ain't got time. So then it's turn around, make our way back to the tube, and then get on back. And so there's nothing that really that we got to experience. But it was 21 years later, my wife and I purposed, we're going to London. And we planned it out. And my wife spent months in advance getting things ready and studying and going through all these things. And now this time when we went, I went inside of Westminster. And I actually listened to the little tour guide thing on the tape and got the full experience. We went to Shakespeare's Globe Theater, and we watched a practice occurring on the stage there. Churchill's War Room, the Tower of London, and gotten the briefing from the Beefeaters inside there. And when we left, it was an entirely different experience. And you know why? You know why. Because we spent time. We lingered. We wrestled. We thought. We observed. And we experienced it. And your pain and your grief are going to work a lot like that too. You don't get to skim through it, and you can't speed through it. And quite often, that is the way we want to do our pain. Treat it like a drive-through. Just give me one quick explanation of my suffering, a little side of clarity, and let me wash it down with some justification as to why I had to go through it. And you don't get to do that. Grief and healing takes time. In fact, sometimes it takes a lifetime of you working through it. Other thing you're going to find as we go through this, there's an awful lot of poetry in this. And when I say poetry, I don't necessarily mean this rhymes with this. It's a lot of parallelism and comparisons. But it's expressed that way. And the idea behind it is that rather than just give you facts and logic and statements, we're going to deal with issues of the heart. And that's what these types of poetry will often do with you. Now, you know this. You've experienced this. Think about your Valentine's Day. Guys, some of you, this is the way you're going to do it. You're going to write a note. I love you. And then you're going to buy her some flowers. And then maybe you'll just write on a little bit more on the note. And this is what you'll say. You're my favorite thing in the whole world. Right? But then there's others of you. And you go, you know what? While that's a true statement, there's a little bit more that I want to express. And so this is what you're going to write. In your silence, I found the sound of everything I never knew was missing. Ho, ho, ho. Okay, you just went to a completely different level in what you communicated, didn't you? Ladies, if he gives you the first, what are you going to do? You're going to smile and go, oh, thanks. But if you get the second one, what happens? Instantly, you turn into the Hallmark heroine. And the guy that's clad in flannel that shows up, you just run and you give him a hug there at gate 14 at the airport, right? Because all of a sudden now there's this depth that happens in the relationship. And now you will give up New York City so that you could live in the Midwestern town with this man who has expressed himself so well. Well, poetry expresses feelings. It does. Powerful feelings. A whole lot more effective than just simple declarations. And so, like love, pain also requires poetry. It's expressed that way. Logic alone is not going to touch it. It's not going to be sufficient for you. Poetry somehow gives a voice to to your suffering. Next month, we're going to be in our Bible reading plan. For those of you that are doing it, we're going to enter into the book of Job. So you will have a few weeks of having looked at it prior to us getting to it in the Bible reading plan. I want to invite all of you, get on the Bible reading plan now. The reason is because you're going to experience the book of Job a whole lot deeper. You're going to know more. You're going to start it after we've started it, but you're going to finish it before we finish it. And so within there, there's just going to be a whole lot more that you will catch because you will expose yourself to it already. And together, what we're going to see, we're going to see in this character Job, he comes very close to breaking, very close, but doesn't quite go there. You're going to hear his friends say things that at times almost sounds true, and at other times it's going to make our God sound like the deistic God. And all the while, what they're doing is they're trying to come up with some sort of explanation as to how do we explain God to Job and what we understand about Job, and you're going to learn, or what we understand about God, and what you're going to learn in and through that process is they don't understand everything. And so sometimes when you're reading Job, you encounter error. And as we study it, we're going to have to kind of filter through some of that and discern it. And then ultimately, you're going to wrestle with, why does God allow suffering? What's the purpose? Why is he even using it? And then here's the biggest thing that I hope you find, is that in the darkness, true worship of God is not going to be found in you getting answers. It's going to require more of you, not just answers. It's going to be a call that you trust the one who holds the answers, even when you don't understand it or you don't get it. So today, no matter whether you're an armchair sufferer or a wheelchair casualty, I'm telling you, God is ever ready to reveal himself to you in ways that sometimes are going to make you a little bit uncomfortable, but your view of him is going to be significantly expanded if you stay with it to the end. And I'll give you the reminder, you're not going to find quick fixes here. It's not going to happen. He won't sugarcoat reality. He's going to invite you to come in and linger for a little while and wrestle and walk with him through the dark valley of the shadows. And at the end, I think you'll find quite a big surprise about God and about yourself. Time will not allow me to go through every chapter and every verse. We could. It might take me 6 years. I'm not going to do that to you. What we're going to do is we're going to hit the biggest high points along the way, and we'll go a little bit deeper in several of those sections as we're going through. A little bit longer in the first few chapters, a little bit longer in the last few chapters, and then there's a couple in between that we're going to spend a fair amount of time in. But in and through it, we're going to meet Job. We're going to meet his four friends. We're going to hear from him. We're going to hear from Job. We're going to hear from God. And it's going to be my prayer. This is going to be a life-changing journey for you. But I want to give you a big spoiler before we do anything else in the coming weeks. Are you ready for this? It's a repeated discovery that's going to surface, my prayer is, every single week. We're going to be finding out that Jesus Christ actually fulfills Job. It ultimately will point to him. You'll see Job at the beginning, he's like a priestly figure, offering sacrifice for his sons. At the end, he's called on God to offer sacrifices for his four friends. But he'll be the priestly figure. And in Jesus, we will find a priestly figure. Not who offers that kind of a sacrifice, but who will offer himself as a sacrifice. And in so doing, he will take care of their sin. And we'll see how Jesus' suffering, if you can believe this, was way deeper than anything Job ever experienced. So much deeper, reaching its climax at the cross. You will see Jesus' call, desire for a justification, a want to understand what is happening. What are you doing, God? To discover he would enter into the deepest darkness of all, of the wrath of God himself against Jesus. And it would feel like the ultimate injustice because he had no sin. But because he willingly submitted to the Father, he would take on what was not his to experience. It was ours. And in so doing, he would rescue us, that we would not have to go through that. And he bore the wounds on the cross and the weight of sin, the sting of death, and all unjustly. But by his suffering, he secured for you and I a resurrection hope. That's what we have. So when the why remains unanswered, You and I, we can still rest in the who. And his name is Jesus, as we'll discover. He understands your perplexity, and he knows you need more than just a pithy tweet of an answer, but a God who knows you and who cares for you. So you come back next week, and we'll go deep.